This is episode 308 of Tech Talk Radio, Australia's premier tech talk show, which aired on Monday, November the 29th, 2010.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio in your backyard and worldwide on the pod.
I don't think anyone should think this is a license to continue to breach copyright. iiNet is not responsible for stopping it.
There's no real demand for censorship of the internet in Australia. There's no other country in the Western world, at least, that's trying anything like this.
Netflix aren't better at anything, but we think we've got something, and we call it the iPad.
And today, we're delighted to be present at the creation of digital radio in Australia.
Senator Conroy is completely botching the implementation of this filtering policy of his.
For adults who want to be able to watch the other material, we're not proposing to do that.
On air, on the internet, and on the pod, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Why would anyone trust this government not to make a complete and utter shambolic mess of the national broadband network?
Is that really the position, the Luddite position of a political party that calls itself the Liberal Party, Mr. Speaker? Apparently they don't like progress. Which part of time would they like us to go back to? 1960, 1930, 1910?
What you've just heard was Australia's Prime Minister, Julia Gillard, giving the opposition leader a roasting over the rollout of the national broadband network. Hello, everybody. I'm Andrew McComb, and welcome to this week's edition of Tech Talk Radio. Last Friday, the Senate finally passed the bill for structural separation of Telstra's wholesale and retail arms, which opens up the way for one of the government's key election promises, the continued rollout of the national broadband network. Telstra's retail and wholesale split is a key part of the establishment of the government's $35.7 billion national broadband network. The legislation passed the Senate by 30 to 28 votes after days of protracted and angry debate with the support of the Greens and independent senators Nick Xenophon and Steve Fielding. Ironically, the Governor of the Reserve Bank, Glenn Stevens, appeared before a parliamentary committee and argued in favour of a cost-benefit analysis of the network, something the government has been reluctant to provide on the basis of commercial interests, currently awaiting comment from the Australian consumer watchdog, the ACCC. So what does the structural separation of Telstra mean to Australians? Despite the Howard government's 1997 reforms to the Telecommunications Act, which included so-called competition into the market, such as Optus, the landscape for consumers has been grim, with Telstra exploiting its monopoly as the buyer and seller of wholesale services to gouge the public and its struggling rivals. Senator Stephen Conroy says the reforms are necessary because dealing with Telstra's rip-offs is an unavoidable reality. In many cases, Telstra has been nabbed charging its failing wholesale customers, such as Dodo and Freshtel, more than it charges everyday punters for phone and internet services advertised in the paper. Some commentators have drawn parallels of competition, saying it's like Woolworths owning the farms and factories in the country. In the past, the idea was that different retailers could access Telstra's network at a fair price. In theory, if Telstra was uncooperative, the retailers could force Telstra's hand, resulting in costly legal fights, but little in the way of reform. Conroy's plan would create one network company, regulate to ensure competition, as opposed to the current farce where the network is controlled exclusively by Telstra. The network, perhaps partially owned by the government, would then sell wholesale services to any number of competing retail companies. Households would be able to choose Telstra among several other carriers, but without the conflicts of the current arrangements. So looking at the sums, NBN Co's infrastructure plus Telstra's infrastructure equals the Australian broadband network, which will be 8 years in the rollout with the added advantage of Telstra no longer able to stack the pricing odds in its favour. Sounds too good to be true, but at face value, that's what we're about to have. So in Julia Gillard's vernacular, maybe we'll have to be thankful that Australian Luddites didn't win the last election. But then again, there's a long glass road ahead of us.
This week on Tech Talk Radio.
Telstra to split after 12 months of negotiations. The NBN has brought out the best in our federal politicians. Adam Turner turns his attention to credit card fees for overseas transactions. There's plenty of online security issues this week. And Apple released the long-awaited iOS 4.2. With 4.3 in the wings. First up, though, here's Dr. Ron with this week's news roundup from the Tech Talk Radio News Desk.
This is Tech Talk News.
This week on Tech Talk News, the Senate clears the way for the National Broadband Network and structural separation of Telstra. The Communications Minister announces changes to television's anti-siphoning list. Retailers call on the government to scrap the $1,000 threshold for GST-free online shopping. A 19-year-old Melbourne man pleads guilty to a denial-of-service attack against government web servers. And Google Street View is launched in Germany. Welcome to Tech Talk News. The Senate has cleared the way for the National Broadband Network and for the structural separation of Telstra. The bill was passed by a vote of 30 to 28 on Friday afternoon after a lengthy and vigorous debate. Despite coalition attempts to delay the vote until next year, Independent Senator Mr. Nick Xenophon told the Senate on Thursday that there were compelling reasons to deal with this legislation now. The Labor government's bill was ultimately supported by Senator Xenophon, as well as the Greens and Independent Senator Steve Fielding. The Communications Minister, Senator Stephen Conroy, said that the Telecommunications Legislation Amendment, Competition and Consumer Safeguards Bill, will help to bring broadband prices down by allowing greater competition in the sector. In a media release on Friday afternoon, Senator Conroy said the legislation delivers key reforms that allow for the structural separation of Telstra, which means the agreement between Telstra and NBN Co. can be finalised. Senator Conroy was referring to the $11 billion deal made with Telstra in June, in which NBN Co. will acquire access to Telstra's passive infrastructure, including pits, ducts and backhaul fibre, and Telstra in turn will be allowed to compete in auctions for 4G or LTE mobile spectrum. Lower House MPs will now return for another sitting of Parliament this week to rubber stamp the legislation. Also in Parliament this week, the Communications Minister, Mr. Conroy, announced changes to the controversial television anti-siphoning laws. Anti-siphoning protects the rights of free-to-air stations, enabling them to broadcast nationally significant programs ahead of the pay TV networks. Senator Conroy has announced a two-tier system for Australians after the existing list comes to an end in December.
Tier A will comprise nationally iconic events such as the Melbourne Cup, the Bathurst 1000 and the State of Origin. Free-to-air broadcasters will be required to show these events live and in full on their main analogue and digital channel.
Senator Conroy went on to say that the Tier B list will be comprised of regular sporting events such as AFL and NRL games, as well as non-finals games of the Australian Open tennis, and that free-to-air broadcasters would have the flexibility to televise these events on digital multi-channels. Importantly, Senator Conroy also said that the new laws will require broadcasters to televise the anti-siphoning listed events that they acquire. Existing legislation needs to be modified to enact the changes, which will require parliamentary approval next year. eBay shoppers and power sellers are safe for now. Assistant Treasurer, the Honourable Bill Shorten, MP, said last week that the government was not considering the imposition of the GST on more online sales, despite saying he was concerned at the competition faced by Australian retailers. Local retailers want government assistance as the rising value of the Australian dollar entices more people to access online stores based overseas for GST-free shopping. Mr. Shorten said that there was no policy proposition for the GST to apply to all online shopping, but that a debate was emerging from retailers in Australia who felt that the $1,000 threshold, under which GST does not apply, is set too high. Founder of the Harvey Norman retail juggernaut, Mr. Jerry Harvey, spoke on commercial radio last week. He called for the government to scrap or lower its $1,000 threshold. But a spokesman for eBay Australia said if retailers are struggling or think that they are missing out, then they are simply not online or not online in a competitive way. A university student from Roxburgh Park last week pled guilty in the Melbourne Magistrates Court to four charges for his involvement in a distributed denial-of-service attack launched against federal government websites. 19-year-old Steve Slayo was charged with inciting others to impair electronic communications and two counts of unauthorised access to restricted data. Mr. Slayo's barrister told the court that he was angered by Federal Communications Minister Stephen Conroy's plans to filter the internet. The court heard that Mr. Slayo helped launch damaging attacks on specific Australian government websites, intending to make them inaccessible by flooding the host servers with requests to establish connections. The attacks forced Mr. Conroy's website offline for some time, and the parliamentary website was unavailable for more than 5 hours. An Australian Federal Police high-tech crime investigations team identified Mr. Slayo through an IRC chat room. The matter has been adjourned for sentencing in December. And less than 1 week after Google launched its Street View navigation service in Germany, privacy proponents have been subjected to a frenzied real-world hate campaign. Two bizarre images have already emerged from Germany, one of an apparently naked man climbing from the boot of a Mercedes with what appears to be a dead dog in the driveway, while another photo shows what appears to be an emergency childbirth taking place on the side of a road. 3% of the German population elected to opt out of Google Street View service, but their actions reportedly sparked a backlash from anti-privacy vandals, who pelted homes with eggs and stuck Google's cool stickers on their letterboxes. A Google Germany spokeswoman said the company distances itself completely from the attacks. I'm Dr. Ron, and that's your tech update for this penultimate edition of Tech Talk Radio 2010.
Previously on Tech Talk Radio.
When 140 characters just isn't enough.
Yeah. I'm coming to you live from Sophia's family restaurant out at Burwood East.
Dr. Ron, did you tell him the wrong date?
I saw Social Network.
Did you? What'd you think?
Yay.
It's good.
It is good.
I'm very sad. Steve Wozniak, the traitor.
We'll talk a little bit about NBN because there have been a lot of shenanigans going on there. I like the word shenanigans.
Too scared to touch it.
Your phone is not registered on a phone network.
Thanks to the trailblazing Google Wave, people will already have an idea of what Titan is and how it works.
Because that's how it all sort of...
So not the fun zombies.
No, not the fun zombies.
Boring.
Feel the love. Feel the Facebook love.
Telstra have announced a 12 gig data pack for your iPad.
More shenanigans going on through...
More shenanigans!
Entertaining, informative and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio. The panel on Tech Talk Radio.
Everybody, welcome to the penultimate edition, apparently, of Tech Talk Radio for 2010. This is the last show from Pen Ultimate. Careful, Will.
The ultimate pen.
Yeah, the ultimate pen. Yes. Welcome to the show, everybody. It's good to be here again for the, second last one. Or is it the last one? It's the last one from the studio, second last one for the year. Dr. Ron.
It is the last one.
You're responsible for all this.
From this studio for the year, isn't it?
It is indeed.
Very exciting. How's your week?
Challenging, but it's nearly over. It's only Monday afternoon. It's nearly over.
You've been busy whenever I've spoken to you on the phone. You've said, hi, Dr. Ron. Yep, busy. Got to go by. Trying to get out of here.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Well, there's a lot to do at the moment. But anyway, it all finishes very shortly from a professional point of view. So we get to play radio and then we go on holidays, which is just fantastic. But anyway, I've had some technical challenges, which I'll talk to you about during the course of the week. Some computer-related things. One a Windows-related thing and one's a Macintosh-related thing. So I've got the panel here. We can throw it out there and chew the fat, and some of our listeners might even know the answer to it. They come and tell us on the chat.
Let's.
chat.techtalkradio.com.au. Also joining the panel this evening, Justin Dunlop has come in for... off the bench. He's again. Back. This is 2 weeks in a row. It's unheard of, JD.
I think it might be more than that.
I think it's probably three weeks now.
3 weeks in a row. Oh, goodness me.
Heavens.
And Lena is here. With her lovely Haikus t-shirt on this evening.
Haiku.
Is that how you pronounce that?
Yes.
Yeah, good. And Graham's here. He's in the corner over there. He's getting ready for the OB He's getting ready for next for the big outside broadcast next week.
He's saving his voice. Like
actually, to be quite truthful, like what happens was he went up to the pizza restaurant and he lost his chair here in the studio last night. And of course, the music stopped. And of course, he had nowhere to sit down.
That's right. He had nowhere to sit down. There were more panelists than there were chairs and microphones. But we'll have one for you next week, Graham.
Absolutely. All right, don't forget, come along next weekend. It's going to be fun. Or next Monday night. This time next week. Yeah, for a bit of beer and pizza and tech talk. Can't go wrong, really, can you? Dr. Ron, you got some Coro.
Got correspondence. Got two tonight. Two valuable pieces of correspondence. And you can send correspondence to us at feedback@techtalkradio.com.au.
Are we going to read it out next week?
Yeah, we'll have the usual feedback. It would be like telegrams at
Coro,
a wedding or something.
You're going to be wandering around a hall with a microphone doing Coro next week. That's going to be fun.
You can bring your own correspondence if you like. Tim.
Yeah, bring the 7 second delay, I reckon.
I'm mindful of that. Tim, via the Tech Talk Radio feedback email address, says, hi, team. Much is said about Telstra's often appalling customer service.
I think I saw this come in today.
So I thought I had to say something when they actually got it right. Having heard about the new data packs, I was eager to quickly sign up and enjoy the nice big quotas. Reading the website, I learnt that I had to contact Telstra customer service to make the upgrade. With the experience that almost everyone has had at least once, I was settling myself in for at least a half hour wait on hold. But then I noticed a link to a live chat service. Not expecting much, says Tim. I was pleasantly surprised to have my upgrade done in less than 5 minutes. Much thanks goes to Graham from Telstra for this fantastic service.
Well done, Graham.
Well done, Graham. I know live chat with businesses often feels quite gimmicky for many, but I urge you to give it a go where companies offer it. And he says, oh, and Andrew, this is the penultimate episode. Well, Timmy got that. Andrew did a good job. He got that at the start. He's put a link there to some data pack information that Telstra are offering at the moment. So I'll pop that in the show notes.
Very good value for money. They've finally come to the party, Telstra. But then again, they were split.
That's right. That's right.
The wood axe came out today. The fire axe. Straight down the middle.
We'll talk about that. Yeah, we certainly will. But Tim, I've also used the live chat service and I've found Telstra's live chat service to be very useful indeed.
I used live chat with a bank the other day.
How was that experience? Was it with the NAB?
It was, no, no.
We'll talk about that a bit later.
We'll talk about that. No, it was with the Commonwealth Bank actually. You know how you see that little thing up the top there and I figured, well, I can either spend 3 hours listening and fighting their IVR or else I can click here and give it a whirl, Sherl, and I did. And it worked. I spoke to some, or should I say, I typed to somebody, and they basically sent me the same links in the URLs that I was looking at to try and find out a piece of information. And but no, it seemed to work all right. It was good.
Good.
It was good. It only took about 5 minutes for them to log in. You know how it says on an IVR, it says, your call's important to us.
Yes.
And please stay on the line. Well, you get that in repeated texts back to your chat window every minute or so.
That must be very scary the first time you do it.
Oh, dear. Yeah, so that was my experience. But there you go. And yes.
But in that chat window, do you get a little message that scrolls up saying you are the second, number five being serviced at the moment, or you don't?
No.
You just have to sit and wait patiently, do you?
You have to wait, yeah.
Ah.
Yeah. But someone comes along eventually. A lot of companies are doing it, though. It's got
to
be good.
And presumably you have to give them your account details in the chat?
It depends whether you're logged into their net banking system.
Right.
If you're logged in, I think they know who you are.
Right.
So speaking of that,
you don't need to reveal anything in the chat window.
No, you don't. Well, not unless you really wanted to, but they probably say don't do that. Yeah. Speaking of what we just, revealing identity and IVRs, Dr. Ron, I saw a tweet of yours during the week. You were dealing with a credit card agency that when you actually put the numbers in to their IVR, they knew, Mr. Dr. Ron.
Yes,
congratulations.
That's right. Congratulations.
As opposed to when you deal to Telstra and they go, can I get that number again, please?
Yeah, this has been an ongoing problem with Telstra for years and years and
years.
It is
very frustrating, isn't it?
It's extremely frustrating. And
sorry, I didn't catch that.
We could do a whole... I'm sorry, I didn't quite catch that.
Yeah. Can you please retype that number
again? Did you say Abu Dhabi? The whole issue of the Telstra
then you
IVR...
get people come back and say, yes, we hate the system too.
We need to wait for Graham to be at a microphone to talk about this properly and to do the topic justice. But yes, they have IVR issues. And I spoke to a telco during the week, which is soon to be my former telco, Three, on hold
That's it.
For about
It's come to this, hasn't
28 minutes or something before I actually got to speak to a human. I had to punch through about six or seven levels of IVR. It was horrible.
Just churn.
Oh, I'm going to have to.
But there's all the same.
Well,
I rang Telstra the other day. She was in the Philippines. Hello, it's not raining in Tokyo.
Well, that might have been the case, but
she's a lovely lady, though.
I thought, you know, the IVR was just is pointless. I just had all these options and none of them were what I wanted to do. And what I wanted to do was just make a very basic routine account inquiry. Anyway, moving right along. Via email, our chat moderator extraordinaire, Jeff Dudley, says...
Has it gone up yet?
Hi, Ron. It has. I'm about to put a link in the chat room. the photo arrived today. I've scanned it and attached it. If I look like a stunned mullet, it's because I was. Regards, GD. GD... recently tripped over to the United States.
He flew over, actually.
He flew over, and he...
He missed it.
There was a mission if he chose to accept it, and he chose to accept the mission, and he wore a Tech Talk Radio official apparel item. He wore the baseball cap with a Tech Talk Radio logo on the front and had his photograph taken with shuttle astronaut Dr. Jim Riley at the Astronaut Hall of Fame at the Kennedy Space Center. So I'm going to pop a link to the photograph, much to GD's embarrassment, I'm sure, in the chat room, and I'll put it in the show notes in the forum as well.
So you've just done that.
I've just done that. Congratulations, GD. That's a fantastic effort. A photograph with a real-life NASA astronaut, and you're wearing a Tech Talk Radio baseball cap. And you also got the promo done, too, that we've run before.
Yes, I've got it here. Would you like to hear it?
Yeah, let's. If we have the technology.
This is going to be interesting. Hang on.
It is, just to put you on the spot.
Could be this one.
Hi, this is shuttle astronaut Jim Riley, and I'm welcoming you to Tech Talk Radio.
Good work, GD. You've done an excellent job. That's all the correspondence. Feedback at techtalkradio.com.au is the address.
Around the world, you're listening to Australia's premier tech talk show, Tech Talk Radio.
I don't know what the word was during the course of the week, but one that comes to me now was proud. The proud. I was proud of what our Prime Minister said in the Parliament, which you probably heard on the opening of the show. She called the opposition a bunch of Luddites. Now, I thought, this is real Parliament
did
for you,
did she say that
it?
In Parliament? Absolutely. Or did she say it at the presser or something?
No.
Question time.
Yeah, cross the looked him in the eye on the other side of the, you know, the big, where all the books are, and said, you're a Luddite. The party's a Luddite.
Mr. Rabbit, you are an Luddite. And what did Mr. Abbott say, opposition leader?
I don't know. Does it matter, really?
Nah. Well, no. Probably not.
So, but yes, it was the shenanigans that was on for young and old in federal parliament this week. And I guess the good thing about it is they've all gone on holidays now. Today is Monday. If you're listening to us on the pod, hi to all the taxi drivers up north in...
listening on an 8KTR.
8KTR, yes. But yes, today being Monday, they hung around. When I say they, the politicians that we voted in, they hung around the House of Reps in particular to rubber stamp the bill that went through the Senate on Friday afternoon, fairly late in the evening.
So they have rubber stamped it?
They have rubber stamped it. It cost us taxpayers $750,000 for the privilege of having them all fly back for 2 hours and then fly back to wherever they go for their Christmas holidays. So whether that's a good taxpayers' money or not, I don't know. But the whole bottom line is now that we have the bill in place where Telstra can now be split. But once again, there's still one more obstacle to go, and that is it has to go through the shareholders.
Yeah, the Telstra shareholders have to approve it.
Yes, yes. And I guess, look, it's all got to be good, really, in a lot of respects.
So I'm guessing they'll have some sort of special, you know, extraordinary meeting or whatever the corporate speak is.
They'll sit on it until the next shareholders meeting, which will probably be October or November next year.
Well, that's just the problem. They've just had the AGM. They just had the AGM in Melbourne last week or 2 weeks ago or something. So they'll have to have a special meeting ahead of the next AGM, surely.
So is it going to be good for shareholders? Is it going to be good for you and me, splitting of Telstra? So all their back-end stuff becomes government-owned.
Yep.
Back to where it was prior to Telecom Australia, says he, looking at the panel. These guys are going to be just a retail arm.
Well, it's two issues for shareholders. They either want good dividends and or they want good share value.
Well, the Telstra share price has never been as low as it has been, but on the news of the split, it actually did rally a little bit. It's gone up considerably.
Yeah, it was $2.60. To nowhere near where it needs to be. 60-ish, wasn't it, I think, today? $2.60 something?
Something like that.
Have a quick look at the ASX. But, it did, you're right, Andrew. It did rally to some extent. So a little bit of confidence there. Now, it's going to remove all the uncertainty, I suppose. So now the government has made a decision and they've said this is what is going to happen. This will be happening from a legislative point of view. Now, if the shareholders say yay,
yeah,
then it will go ahead.
I guess it'll certainly smooth out the playing field a little bit because Telstra has always had the advantage of being the incumbent, and when you've got the mass of a network behind you like they did, yes, it certainly gave the unfair advantage to a lot of extent. But yeah,
well, share price was $2.84 closed that today, so that's quite a bit further north than $2.55 or whatever record low was last week or the week before.
Yeah. Mr. Conroy had this to say about the split.
Ever since Telstra was privatised, Australians have suffered. They have suffered with high prices, less competition and less innovative services. Today is about celebrating a significant win for Australian consumers.
Yes. Is it a considerable win? You're sort of beating it up that way, Dr. Ron?
Yeah, I think so. I think it is a considerable win. If they've done the deal there where the government can now buy access into their infrastructure. So
haven't they bought the infrastructure?
Well, things like what they've called their passive infrastructure. So all their ducts, cable ducts, pits, their backhaul fiber.
Sounds like a feature film.
All that sort of stuff. And in exchange for allowing NBN Co. access to all that infrastructure, Telstra will be able to bid on the long-term evolution spectrum when they have the upcoming wireless options, for example. Yeah. So that was a big teaser for Telstra, and they took it.
Glenn Stevens. You know who he is, don't you?
Mr. Stevens?
Reserve Bank man.
Yes.
He was in the hallowed halls up there too at the same time that Mr. Conroy was saying what he was saying.
What did he have to say?
Well, you know, this the business plan for the NBN, which is what the opposition has been looking to try and get hold of before they vote on it, Nick Xenophon in particular.
Well, there is perhaps a business plan. We haven't seen one, but...
Well, yeah, exactly.
The government says that there is one, but they're not going to release it for scrutiny because the opposition's already made up their mind and they're not going to support the NBN. They're going to rip it apart. But all that's... well, that's all by the by now, isn't it? Because the vote's gone through.
Well, it is. It is. But Glenn Stevens was asked what he thought about a business plan for the NBN Co.
As a general proposition, there probably are some projects that the private sector won't fund that still ought to be done. Whether this is one of them would be another question. But I think you can imagine some projects that the private sector just doesn't feel it can take the risk on, but which the public sector, which after all has a stronger balance sheet than anyone else, might on some occasions be able to accept that risk. But there ought to be, of course, a proper cost-benefit analysis of that case in those instances.
A proper cost-benefit analysis of the case, which is what the opposition's been
having it
afterwards. Yeah, that's what they've been asking for all the time. Now, Mr. Conroy appears to be just a tad harder hearing. And when he was grilled at the press conference only moments after that was done, this is what happened.
He said that projects like the NBN should be subject to a proper cost-benefit analysis.
No, that's actually what he said. The third word wasn't there. I've got his exact words right here. He said cost-benefit.
Yeah, yeah. It was pretty clear, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Oh, dear. Sorry. But, you know, you look at here in Victoria where we are right now, a lot of commentators, you probably heard, we've had a change of government here just in the last few hours. And it's suffice to say certain people in the media were saying that the outgoing government was sort of like in denial. It was still living in the past. Words could be sort of, well, parallels could be drawn to Mr. Conroy's inability to sort of, no, he didn't say that because he just doesn't want to hear it. You know what I mean?
Mm.
But anyway, upwards and onwards. We're coming into Christmas now. We've got the bill. We've got the split through to, through the Senate.
It's good they got it through before Christmas.
It's been rubber stamped before, come back down to the House of Reps, and it's gone through there beautifully.
Yep.
Now it's up to the Telstra shareholders. What do you reckon's going to happen?
That'll be interesting to watch.
It will, won't it? Mm. It will, won't it? All right. So that's the NBN update for the day. That'll probably be it until next year when we come back in February sometime. We haven't worked out when. We're probably going to come back on Valentine's Day. Is that a good idea?
14th of Feb. Oh.
Thanks, Lena.
I hope you can go the same. 14th of February, returning.
She does good Foley, doesn't she?
She does. 2011.
She giggles a lot.
Yes. 14th of Feb, 2011. So that'll be our first show back for next year.
It will.
What are we doing in between now and then?
I don't know.
Between the next episode, the Outside Broadcast.
I was going to ask you that.
Oh, okay.
Because you did the Outside Broadcast. Are we going to replay our 300th show? That was a good one, that one. I like that.
That was an entertaining episode, wasn't it?
And we got some other good stuff that we'll play to you. The boys will look after you during the course of... We'll be on air still.
We will.
It'll be time to reminisce.
We will. We'll have a summer series, which is what we do each and every year. So we're going to have a bit of a break away from the panel and the production work.
We'll all be tweeting. We'll all be Facebooking. You can keep in touch with us as you normally do. You just won't hear any content from us.
Send us emails. Send us all the news items and things that you usually do.
Now, during the course of the week, a couple of things happen. I'm going to throw these on the table. First things first, I upgraded my Windows 7. I upgraded from Windows 7 to Windows 7.
How did I do that?
I went from 32-bit to 64-bit.
Oh, right.
Now, because there were certain applications that didn't work in 32-bit that I needed to use, and they only worked in 64-bit applications. Is that a sign of the times or what?
Yeah, I don't use any 64-bit
platforms. I've got 64-bit. I've got two applications that I use that are only 64-bit.
So they won't run on a traditional system.
Your operating system is incompatible. Go away and don't bother us when you try and install it.
And what are the two applications?
One's an editing piece of software. In fact, they're both editing pieces of software.
So both top-end and expecting really good hardware underneath them.
Correct. Hmm. Correct. So anyway, that was the reason for the upgrade, but then came all the snowball ramification effects. Now, one in particular, which I'm going to talk about, is Apple's iTunes. In migrating to the 64-bit, it worked well. It went across. But what I don't understand with my iPhone, which I still have because I was going to sync it up and get it all talking, why on earth does it think it's a new installation and I have to format and load the new operating system up before it'll even let me talk to my same computer but running a 64-bit operating system?
Well, it should have picked up on the settings if you copied your My Documents folder across.
Is that the clue? Because I haven't done anything. I just installed it. I loaded up iTunes.
Yeah. And iTunes stores lots of stuff in the My Music folder inside the My Documents.
So if I just copy that from the 32-bit install across to the 64.
You should have all your registry keys and everything else in there.
I'll report back next week at the grand final and I'll let you know what the deal is. So that'd be good. That was my first issue. My other big gripe, and I'm going to look at Graham, who's sort of camera in the other room at the moment, because he might have a clue, because he's a bit of an exchange guru and stuff when it comes to Microsoft. But I did an upgrade on my – I went to Office 10, 2010, the new one, which we're going to give a copy away of next week at the show if you want one. Maybe you don't after I tell you my story.
Maybe we'll still have it in the goodies box.
Exactly. But anyway, when all the new suite came in, it was really good. Put the keys in, did the upgrade, went across seamlessly, flawlessly, until I received an email from a Mac user and another Mac user and another Mac user. Now,
would one of those Mac users have been a panelist on the program tonight?
I'm not having a go at any one particular person or operating system in particular, but every time... This is the upgrade. This is going from Office 2007 to Office 2010. Just hit the upgrade rather than fresh install. Why every time does the Office 2010 go, I'm sorry, I can't do this, I'm crashing and I'm going to recover and I'll be back in just a moment. And every time you put your cursor on a Mac email, it goes pa-doing and doesn't want to know about it.
Because it's a badly made application?
Yes, I think you could be right. Mm. Now... On the new machine at home, the Windows XP, X64, the 64-bit version, fresh install, I can read Lena's emails. Isn't that interesting?
Yes.
So anyway, that's in the too hard basket at the moment, and I don't believe I'm Robinson Crusoe, judging by the other people out there in the world. I asked the Google gods, and they said, yes, we know about this, but no one else knows how to fix it just yet. Well, I haven't found a fix for it yet.
So in your inbox, you've built this nice new machine, and you've got Microsoft Outlook 2010 as your mail client.
Part of Office.
Your email software.
Yep.
Okay. And emails come in and that's all fine. You get Dr. Ron emails and you get other work emails and they're all fine.
Yep.
But then Lena sends you an email.
Anyone. Not just Lena. Lena was the first. She was Robinson Crusoe.
I thought I was the only one.
No, I'm sorry to disappoint you, sweetheart.
So anyone who sends an email message from a Mac computer.
It seems to be a Mac computer. Because all the people I know, and I know several people, all three of them, and have Macs.
And it just crashes, does it? It just crashes Office,
comes up with a screen and says, nah, sorry, don't know, and then comes back.
All right. Now, you'll notice if you're looking at Ustream that Lena is now wearing a mask and looks somewhat like a panellist formerly known as Graham Callaghan. G'day, Graham.
I couldn't resist coming into the studio to comment on this.
I thought you might,
one.
Yes. What can you shed some light on this one for me, Dr. Graham?
Well, you said that on a brand new system with a clean install of Outlook 2010 that it worked okay.
X64? Check. Yep. Yes, it did.
But on your machine that you upgraded from 2007 to 2010...
Yeah, the Office machine, which is a 32-bit version in the Office. Didn't want to know about...
Do you know in application data hidden away somewhere, there's you're connected to an Exchange server, aren't you?
Yes, I am.
Yep. Hidden away in application data somewhere, there's a Microsoft Outlook folder, which has a locally stored copy of your Exchange mail folders.
Was this the PST files and the OST files?
OST file, it probably is.
I did try repairing that.
I would just delete it.
Oh, okay.
Delete the OST file completely.
Yep.
Because all Outlook will do is say, there isn't one. I haven't got a local copy of this. I'll just copy it all back from the Exchange server again.
It's a big file and it'll take half an hour to build it across. I'll do a set and forget when I go home tomorrow night.
Yeah, it's probably not going to take long because you've probably got a nice big fast gigabit network. And
I do.
And you've probably, only got a few gigabytes in your...
All right, I'll try that tomorrow morning.
I would definitely be doing that. I'd delete your OST file, restart, make sure Outlook's shut down and is properly shut down because Outlook's notorious. You shut it down
and it keeps running. Yes.
So make sure Outlook has actually exited. So exit Outlook and then perhaps do a log off and a log back on. And then don't start Outlook.
All right.
And then go and delete the OST file, then start Outlook. Outlook will build a new OST file, and hopefully you'll be able to read your emails quite happily. And if that doesn't work, report back to me next week.
I will. I will. Thank you, Graham.
See, my pleasure.
This is why I listen to this show. You always find out what the deal is. So, okay. Yes.
It's always paid the big bucks.
Absolutely. Yes, well, he does support too, if you know. You should plug yourself one day. All right, so now hopefully I have my workaround for office. Now, other people, you probably find the same thing. You could try this at home and then let Graham know if it works if you've done an upgrade to 2010. And I have my iPhone workaround, which I'll tweet when I get home. Oh, I might not tweet. I'll put up on Facebook.
That was going to be my other question, actually. When you did this 32-bit to 64-bit, you had to do a new install into a different Windows folder, didn't you?
I bought a brand new drive for it.
You couldn't do an upgrade. You can't upgrade from 32 to 64, can you?
No, it's a freshie.
No, it's a fresh install, yeah.
Yep. And so I've learned all about the multiple boot options, because you can actually run, I found, very well, very quite well too. There's good proper English, not.
Yep.
you can actually run the 32-bit on one drive and the 64 on the other, and when it boots up, you can pick one.
Oh, yes, and you can probably run them side by side on the same drive
too. They live harmoniously quite well together so far. dear, it's a bit like boot camp, but at least it's one brand, so you've got half a chance, I guess, really, isn't it, as opposed to...
But you can't share applications between them. You'd have to have a separate install.
Yeah.
Yes,
yeah.
You'd have to install the application into each different version, that's right.
But can I say, I've got lots of headroom now in my RAM. I've got plenty of RAM. 64-bit just goes beyond that.
Yeah, that's one of the big advantages of 64-bit is that you can have lots and lots of RAM. How much RAM did you put in the machine?
I think it was 8.
8
sitting
gig.
Comfortably on 8, and I'm still using all that when I load up some of my editing stuff. It's the multiple processor usage applications that I really like, so that you get a dual quad type sort of thing, and it's really, really satisfying to see the computer working harder than you do, because traditionally they wait for you. You know, the processor does nothing, and it's nice to see them working for a change.
Yeah, that's brilliant. Just with a 32-bit operating system, there's a theoretical maximum of 4 gig. But, of course, because some of it's used for the system to address its own internal things, you only get about 3-point-something gig out of it. So, to be running 8 gig with a nice 64-bit operating system,
it's nice.
Be beautiful.
Bit of
extra didn't have any problem with drivers or anything like that?
No, the only driver I had an issue with was a printer driver, but nothing going to the manufacturer's website and downloading the Windows 7 version, 64-bit
version. And the manufacturer had a 64-bit version available?
They did indeed.
Yeah, a lot of them do these days. It's very good.
It's becoming popular
now, isn't
it? It's
really encouraging. It's good to see. It's great to see. It's the future of computing. The next time I install an operating system, I expect it to be a 64-bit operating system on my computer.
The last time I was talking to Dr. Ron about this on the phone before we dropped out on that network the other day, I think we were talking, the last time we did a bit update was Windows 95, wasn't it? No, 98, wasn't it, Dr. Ron?
It was, 95. Yeah,
95.
Because we had Windows 3.1 and then 3.11, which was Windows for work groups, and that was all in a 16-bit environment. Yep. And I think Windows 95 was the first 32-bit environment.
Yeah, Dark Splat.
Dark Splat in the chat's gone 8 gigs, so small. It is. It is. It's way too small.
It will be in the future.
I like the ones at work. They've got plenty of headroom and stuff like that, which is good.
Onwards
but then
upwards.
Again, they're dedicated machines. This is Tech Talk Radio. I'm Andrew McComb. Graham Callaghan has joined us on the microphone this evening. Dr. Ron's there and JD's down the very end as well. And should we talk about Sophia's briefly?
Lena's lurking somewhere too.
She is behind you. She's doing faces on the webcam.
I've taken over Lena's microphone. I'm sorry about that.
She's doing bunny ears if you're watching on Ustream, I think.
Bunny ears?
Oh dear.
Well, look at the time. Must be time for a glass of water.
You're listening to Australia's most informative technology show.
Tech Talk Radio.
Dear Tech Talk enthusiasts, for the final episode of 2010, Tech Talk Radio will be broadcasting live from the Sophia Family Restaurant in Burwood East. Put the date in your calendar now. It's Monday, the 6th of December at 7 p.m. Come and meet the panel, meet like-minded listeners, enjoy Sophia's world-famous pizza and pasta for just $17.50 per person, and be part of Tech Talk Radio's first outside broadcast. There'll be giveaways, door prizes, mud wrestling, you name it, it'll be happening. Make your reservation now by calling Sophia on 03-9803-5299. Sophia Family Restaurant is a proud sponsor of Tech Talk Radio's 2010 Outside Broadcast. All right, I may have made that bit up about the mud wrestling.
If you've seen some of the stuff on YouTube, it looks a bit strange.
Whilst it is a high-def machine, it's only 720p.
Fraud-def.
Yeah, fraud-def. Yeah, exactly. Take note, Apple, HDMI output cable and carrying case.
Why would I want an Apple TV without a hard drive?
What you're describing is bloatware.
The handset formerly known as the iPhone.
Entertaining.
I don't like spam.
Informative.
There are public VPN services.
Independent.
They run up to, what, 400, 500?
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Thank you. You're welcome.
Listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Adam Turner is a regular on our wonderful program here, otherwise known as Tech Talk Radio. He talks about all sorts of things. He has a couch and he has a view from there.
Heard him on a commercial radio station today.
Yeah, did you ring up and harass him?
I should have rung in.
Hello.
Hello.
It's Ron from Melbourne calling.
I've got
calling.
A problem with my internet, he would have said. Get off, Dr. Ron.
Oh, there's something to do for next year, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so. Yes.
At the Bank for Entertaining Radio. Anyway,
he's got a view, has he?
He does. A view from his couch all the way over the other side of town. Now, he's going to talk about credit card fees for international transactions, yes. Which is hardly tech-related, but it's more online shopping-related. So I thought, oh, well, there's...
Well, all those people out there eBaying or buying from overseas online stores, you've got to decide which way you want to run your finances.
You
do. You want to convert it before or after it comes into your account?
And I have a plan. And it worked quite well because we did it the other day with some stuff that we bought for the radio show. We spent a couple of grand overseas and it cost us next to nothing, which was very good. I'll tell you how we did it after Adam's report.
The cost of the transaction was next to nothing, in other
correct.
Words.
Correct. No yes. transaction, no international transaction
no
fee.
No surcharges.
No, nothing. No surprises. It was very good. Well, anyway, I'll let you know the secret after that. But anyway, yes, but during the course of the week... And I think you alluded to it in the opening of the show, in the news segment, Dr. Ron, was
yes.
the certain people getting their nose out of joint about consumers not having to pay GST on certain goods that are being brought into the country from online shopping. Because everyone's shopping online these days. I know I have. I've probably in the last month probably spent, including the Tech Talk purchase, probably close to $3,000 online.
There is a threshold, a GST-free threshold.
Yeah.
And that's $1,000.
Okay.
So if you buy something online...
So we spent more than that. Should have we paid GST on what we brought in?
Should have we paid GST? Maybe we should have.
Jerry be unhappy about that.
Mm.
Jerry Harvey we speak of.
He can go cry in his big bag of money.
Really?
Yeah.
You have no sympathy for him?
None.
No. Okay. Gizmodo don't either, by the way, if you saw yes. the tweet today. They're very scathing about Jerry Harvey. In fact, yeah. if I can pull up the article here, it says Roslyn Cogan, who I've also purchased from, he does good stuff online
he
too.
Does.
Yeah. Mm. Roslyn Cogan made a huge splash earlier this year when he got into a war of words with Jerry Harvey over pricing of consumer electronics. At the time, Gizmodo decided they weren't going to get involved. It was perfect fodder, according to them, for Today Tonight. Such trashy television. But not so much for Giz. Anyway, last week, Jerry Harvey came out petitioning the government to start charging GST on all purchases purchased online from overseas. Then they've also... finished their first paragraph by saying, hey, Jerry, why don't you move with the times? Get online and STFU. What does that mean?
Shut that up.
Thank you.
Mm. That's what that means.
So be quiet is yes. what it means in yes.
Hush.
An eBay Australia spokesperson said if retailers are struggling or think that they're missing out, then they're simply either not online or they're not online in a competitive way.
Ah, and that's the key to it, isn't it? You go and have a look at Jerry Harvey's online offerings and they're just not there.
No.
You can't buy anything. You can click a button and it'll go to your local shop or something like that.
Store model. You go in, you have a look, you pay big money and you take it home.
Yeah.
He doesn't like online.
Why? Get with the times, Jerry.
Mm.
It's not hard.
Free market, got to stay competitive.
If I go to the Harvey Norman website, I can buy things, can't
no,
I?
Can't.
I can't.
No,
so it's just a catalogue site and that's all.
Yeah, I don't believe so. I haven't been there for a while, but last time I looked, which was probably 6 months ago, it wasn't anything to... You had a store location and a phone number. I think that was about it.
I find that incredible. Like
in this day and age?
10 years almost into the 21st century and a retail like Harvey Norman, you can't buy stuff online.
There's a couple of furniture retailers I've been looking at recently won't even have their prices online, let alone being able to order.
A lot of things don't have their prices online, yeah, because it differs between stores and with different deals. And
with furniture, I can speak from experience with a customer that I have, is that transportation costs between certain centres adds considerable amounts of money to a purchase of a similar couch. Mm. So you could buy one in Melbourne and it will be $200 cheaper than in, say, Cairns, for example, the other end of the country, because of the fact that it's got to get in a truck and it's got to go on a train or whatever it is like that, and it has to get up, and they have to recoup those costs somehow.
But there are some stores there where you have to tell them where you're located, and then it chooses the price for the area you're in.
So, like IKEA.
Yeah, it's not impossible to do.
I've used their chat too. You know, little Inga from Sweden option at the top there? You can speak to Sven.
Sven?
Yeah.
Or Inga?
Sven, I think it was. I spoke to.
Inga shows up on my screen.
Yeah.
That's not the IKEA site, JD. Oh, you're looking at the money. Harvey Norman, though, looking at their website, you're absolutely right. There is no facility there to buy anything. If I click on, for example, computing, desktop computers, I get a nice list of desktop computers that are priced in a specific price range, and then I'm prompted to enter my postcode so I can find out where my local store is.
So why should we as consumers be penalised for someone's lack of enthusiasm towards modern-day trading? Like, I know a lot of people, and it's from young people to my parents, for example, who have embraced online shopping for the reason that you get a good price. You know, and let me give you an example personally the other day. Rivers, you buy your shoes online for half price compared to what you buy them in the shops for. Mm. You've got to provide that service these days. That's where it's coming from. Nothing to do with GST. It's, service providing. And now, sure, Jerry's got overheads. He's got shops. He's got rent. He's got water. He's got staff. He's got all that sort of stuff. But you got to be competitive in this day and fast-moving times. And the other thing, the consumer is so empowered with the price of a product these days. You want to buy a PS3, jump online and look at ShopBot and look at these
get
sort
the
of things.
Get the cheapest price.
Yeah. Find out what the price of the product is in the marketplace and go haggle. Goodness me, if you pay full retail these days, you've got to have rocks in your head, don't you? Sorry, that's my vent for the evening. Yeah. Adam Turner's going to have his turn now. Shall we play it?
We should.
Here's Adam's version of View from the Couch and credit card fees, which a lot of the banks tend to provide these days for us unwillingly on our credit card statements. Ouch, costs a fortune.
Every time you make a foreign transaction on your credit card, even in Australian dollars, you're probably getting slugged by your bank. With the strong Australian dollar, it's tempting to do all your shopping online at sites like Amazon, but you're probably paying more than you think. Not only do many foreign online retailers screw you on the exchange rate, but many banks charge a 2 or 3% fee on foreign credit card transactions. Sometimes you're even slugged the fee if you're buying locally in Australian dollars, but the seller's back end is offshore. Overseas transaction fees on credit cards didn't really come to my attention until I changed banks a few years ago. Suddenly the phrase overseas TXN fee was appearing on my bank statement alongside Amazon transactions. I was ready to switch back to using the credit card with my previous bank until I read the fine print and realised that they'd been charging me the fee as well, but not declaring it on my statement. It seems that most of the big banks charge such a fee on their credit cards. A Google search turned up a good list of foreign currency and international fees at creditcardfinder.com.au. I expect some of the fee goes back to the card's backer, such as Visa. I know we're only talking about a few dollars, but it really irks me. Banks make their billion-dollar profits by constantly stinging us with various fees and hoping we'll never notice or think it's not worth complaining. Looking back over my credit card statement, I was charged a fee when buying books using the Kobo app on the Samsung Galaxy Tab, even though I paid in Australian dollars. The same with buying a Xenio magazine. I've even seen complaints about people paying the fee when purchasing Windows Phone 7 apps and other online apps and services. I thought PayPal might be a good way to bypass overseas transaction fees, but it's not quite that simple. It seems that if I link my credit card to my PayPal account and make a purchase, some banks still charge a fee if the end merchant is located overseas. That really sucks. Of course, there are other drawbacks to using PayPal. For starters, it's only offering around 95 Aussie cents to the US dollar, when the rate is currently around 98. I think that's because PayPal builds in a 2.5% currency conversion fee. If your bank still charges you an overseas transaction fee, you're now paying around 5% extra on your transaction. Even if you transfer money into your PayPal account up front, you're still getting slugged with a currency conversion fee. Things get more complicated if your credit card offers an interest-free period, which makes it tempting to use your credit card as much as possible. It might be worth paying a fee in order to enjoy an interest-free period, especially if your bank account offsets your mortgage. It depends on whether money sitting in your home loan longer saves you more than you pay in the transaction fee. It also depends on the rewards options offered with your credit card. by the time you crunch the numbers, it's such a small amount that it doesn't seem worth worrying about, especially when you're saving so much by shopping overseas rather than locally. Of course, such apathy is what the banks are relying on when they slug you with these fees. This is probably a good time to point out that I'm not a financial advisor, so don't go on my word when organising your finances. I'm just someone who hates getting screwed by financial institutions. There are some fee-free options around. I've heard good things about Wizard's Clear Advantage card, which offers 55 days interest-free and doesn't charge exchange fees or foreign transaction fees. There might be a catch, I'm not sure, so read the fine print carefully. If we're only talking about a few dollars per month, then it might not be worth the hassle, but if you're regularly spending a lot online, it's certainly worth investigating this kind of option. My colleague Nirav Bhatt looks at this in detail on his blog. If you Google Nirav, N-E-E-R-A-V, and Wizard Clear Advantage card, you'll find his post, and it's certainly worth a read. I'm actually on the lookout for a way to set up a US credit card, which would be great for subscribing to US-only services and perhaps avoiding some fees, but I think it's pretty tricky without a US social security number. Meanwhile, I've got a few foreign friends who help me out with such things, but I try not to call upon them too often and risk stretching the friendship. Meanwhile, I'm doing everything I can to minimise the sting of foreign transaction fees.
Entertaining, informative and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Yeah, it sort of hurts when you get stung by those bank fees. It really does, especially when they sort of like double dip and feels like they triple dip at times. But anyway, here's the clue. This is what we did the other day. We bought some little things, some electronic gadgetry from the United Kingdom.
For work?
Yeah, for us.
Yep.
It's for the OB for next week.
Oh, this is for Tech Talk.
Yeah.
For us.
Yeah.
Yep.
Now, Dr. Ron, you've called this particular, I'm not trying to give them a plug or an advertising thing or any which way, shape or form, but otherwise to you known as the Communist Bank.
Yes, the Communist Bank.
They have a product which is called Travel Money.
Okay.
This Travel Money lets you put money on a card. It's like a credit card. Well, it is a credit card.
Oh, like a...
Okay. MasterCard.
Like a card, yeah,
yeah,
yep.
But it's like, you know how you use a prepaid and postpaid credit card? So
yep,
you've
yep.
got, you load it up. You load it up in foreign currency. Now, this foreign currency can be US dollars, it can be British pounds, or it can be a combination of all different types of
really?
Foreign currency.
And they'll
up to
track
eight currencies.
And they'll track how much you've put in each currency.
Correct, they
Fantastic.
Will.
Fantastic.
Now, when you buy this product, you get to load it up with however much money you choose to put onto this product.
Yep.
And there's one flat fee. And it's $15.
And is that fee charged when you...
When you load the card.
When you load the card
up. It is charged.
Okay.
And what that means is you can take 10,000 US dollars or 5,000 quid, put it onto the card. It will cost you
$15. Beautiful.
And what that means is you then have credit card currency in British pound sterling or US dollars, and there's no currency conversion at the other end.
Ah.
When you buy online and you use your... You know, want to pay US dollars and, you know, any of those big shops overseas.
Because that's often where it's one of the charges you always see is the currency conversion.
It hurts.
Yeah.
It hurts.
So I can put something on my Visa card when I buy it online, but if I'm buying it from an American store, there's always a currency conversion fee.
Absolutely. And when you're buying little things, you know, sub-$100 things, you go, oh, yeah, it is but a flesh wound. But when you start buying things in the order of thousands of dollars, those percentages, that 2 or 3% that Adam spoke
makes
of,
a difference.
Can
yeah.
really add up. And this is a way of getting around that. And, of course, if you load your card up, then you can just shop to your heart's content and you'll never pay. Until you reload, then they'll charge you 1% to reload.
Okay, so the $15, just to recap, the $15 covers the currency of conversion from
when you
Australia
buy the
dollars to whatever it is.
Yeah, and irrelevant of the amount that you put in.
Beautiful.
It's a great way of doing it and gets you around all those things. And buying whatever currency you want online and no conversion fees. Just rocks up. It's great.
Is it just the
Beautiful.
Commonwealth Bank that does that or are the other banks got similar
it's
products?
The only one that I'm personally aware of.
Okay.
But especially at the moment, while the dollar is good, you can go shopping overseas and upset Jerry Harvey.
Sounds like Adam needs to do this.
Yes.
If you're listening, Adam.
Yes. We during the break, we were discussing Mr. Harvey Norman on here in the panel whilst we were listening to, because we multitask in here, because now that Lena's here, you know, because us guys, we can't multitask that well. But now that Lena's here, she's educating us in the weirding ways.
She's put the pressure on.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
really? Now, you were saying that on that bottom of that blog that we were reading off Giz.
Yes, in the comments.
Shape up or ship out.
Yeah, someone made an interesting comment that I thought it spoke the truth. He said, if you're not utilising an online presence in your business, then in 5 years, prepare to be gone.
5 years.
Mm.
Yeah. Sign of the times, really, isn't it?
I think so. I definitely think so.
Do you shop much online?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah?
Quite a bit.
What do you buy? If it's not a personal question.
No, no, that's not a personal question.
And I'm just sort of thinking, just be broad here. Are we talking clothing? Are we talking tech? Are we talking
clothes,
music?
I buy all my music online, but mostly through iTunes, all my music. Yeah.
I bought some music online the other day on iTunes. I could actually copy it from one device to another without any form of copy protection. You'd be pleased to know Graham.
You spent the extra money and got the DRM free.
Yeah.
I just tried it. I thought, I haven't tried it. I haven't downloaded anything off iTunes for years. I thought I'd try it, and it worked. Hmm. It was only $1.69 or something. So,
was it a Beatles song?
No.
Oh.
No, the Beatles are here now on iTunes, aren't they?
They are, finally.
In Australia. Yeah. They've been on, have they been in other?
No, worldwide. No.
Oh, really? It's worldwide. Well, I don't need to buy the Beatles because I've got the CDs anyway.
You know the story behind why the Beatles aren't there?
No, to tell.
Because Beatles' own record label was Apple.
Oh, really? And I thought Michael Jackson owned them or something like that.
No, the Beatles did. And Apple Computer Inc., now Apple Inc., and Apple Record Company got into a dispute about music. And so the story goes with the original Apple II, so the old 2-bit machines, that they had to sign away that they were never going to generate music on the Apple computer, and therefore there wasn't a trademark infringement because it was a separate business. So when the Macintosh came out and could make noise, and in fact make music...
Garbage Band.
Yep. No, this is the original Macintosh in...
That one got through.
GarageBand. Sorry.
I was typing.
See, you're not multitasking.
She's working on time delay.
The little secret is the alert beep was called Sosumi.
Sosumi. Really?
Sosumi.
Didn't Phil Collins have a song called that? No, that was Sosudio. That's the one, sorry.
So Sosumi was the name of the boink that Apple's made whenever they got an error. And so it was in reference to the trademark infringement with Apple Records.
So why is why have we got Beatles now? Is there the time has elapsed?
30 years has passed or something's happened. Steve's
discovered the Beatles?
Yeah.
Yep. Hey, iOS 4.2 came out during the week too.
It did.
Have you got it yet? Have you downloaded it? No, you haven't got a jailbreak yet.
3.1.2.
It was out for the beta developers. Is it out for everybody now?
4.2 is out for
iOS
everybody.
iOS 4.2. What did I say?
4.2.1 is out for developers.
And 4.3 is out for Christmas, apparently. I think I read somewhere. Yeah. I don't know whether that was a beat up or what, but
it is.
Yeah. But Apple has released iOS 4.2 operating system for its mobile devices, rendering the days of running one active application at a time to the dustbins of history.
Well, that's not quite true.
Really?
So 4.2 is available now for the iPad and the iPhone.
I was going to go for an iPad update.
3, but multitasking on the iPad isn't full multitasking as the iPhone users would know it. It just does some background stuff. It doesn't truly multitask.
My iPad's been relegated to the kids. They love it. And the wife, she reads the weather in the morning on it. And yeah, it's the always-on internet-connected device which lives on the kitchen table. And it's perfect for that.
What they were claiming is iOS...
Come on for Christmas.
4.2 is going to unify all the platforms. So the iTouch, the iPhone and the iPad are all going to be on the same operating system. Now, the Apple TV's only just come out recently, which is a new iOS device, the second version of the Apple TV.
Does that run on 4.2 as well?
No, it doesn't.
Really?
It got upgraded to 4.1.
Oh, fantastic. Come on, Steve. Really?
So, there you go. Go figure.
I think I'll get an iPad next year.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Why are you waiting? Are you waiting for something in particular, like cash flow?
iPad 2.
Retina display.
Oh, dear.
Mm.
What's retina display?
It's the fancy display.
Talking to the microphone, please. This is radio.
It's the fancy display that my iPhone 4's got. You're so rude to me. I'm going to cry one day.
Have you been down to O'Brien's yet and had your crack fixed?
No. Oh, charming. No, I haven't. Come on.
She's holding her iPhone up there. I thought you were talking about it before.
There's a dirty, great big crack in her iPhone screen.
There is a big crack in my iPhone screen.
I saw someone with a bigger crack than yours today.
Hi,
Mel, if you're listening. Oh, she's damaged her iPhone like you can believe.
I don't like the way that we phrase this.
No,
it's shattered.
Lena's retina display.
Dr. Ron, you're blushing. Well,
it's the...
I'm trying to pull us out of this dive.
Try and spot a pixel on that screen.
A single pixel. It's pretty high res. Yeah. No, I'm not expecting to be able to spot a single pixel.
Now, JD, have you got your iPhone with you?
Yes.
It's best to compare between the older one and the newer one.
This is what Mac people do, isn't it? They get their iPhones out and compare.
Right. Yeah. To unlock it.
So we've got version 4 and...
I'm just the Android in the middle here. Hang on. Yep. Yes, okay.
You can see quite a bit of difference in the picture.
You can. Yeah. Yes, you can. You can see a significant difference.
This is great for radio guys.
That's retina display. And the current iPad has JD's
display. So what do you call your display, JD, on that one?
The old one.
Legacy, traditional display. Lena has
retina
display.
Yeah.
Okay. It is noticeably sharper, isn't it?
It is, yeah. So I'm waiting for the iPad to have that because once I've got this on my iPhone, I can't look at a normal iPad without going, oh, wish it was retina display.
Ooh, that's all furry and horrible.
It's ruined me.
Allegedly, soft and fuzzy. iPad 2 is going to have a USB port on it as well.
Ooh. Oh, really? Oh,
I don't believe that for a minute.
That'll be vaporware
and
until we see
it. And three axis gyroscopes, whatever that means.
Well, okay, you've got up, down,
gaming.
You've got, yeah,
gaming.
Well, you've got G-Force now, so as you swing around, you get a, yes.
You know those old Labyrinth wooden games with the ball bearing, you could slide around the maze?
Yeah.
Yeah, that on the iPad.
Okay.
It'll be that kind of thing.
Cool.
Tilting.
And better video phone as well.
Have you done FaceTime? Is that what they call it?
Mm-hmm. I haven't, but Lena probably
Lena?
Has.
I have on my
What's
phone,
it like?
Yeah, it's pretty good.
Yeah?
Yeah, you've got to be both on Wi-Fi though. Both you and the person.
So it doesn't use the mobile phone network. It uses the internet over a Wi-Fi net to do FaceTime, does it?
Yeah.
And how does it hold up? Can you
brilliantly?
Yeah.
Yep. Doesn't drop out.
Have you tried it like in long distance or just short distance from one room to another on the local network? Or have you tried it further afield to maybe another house, town, state, country near you?
No, I did it from my parents' place in Gippsland back here to Melbourne.
Yeah.
And that worked really well.
Okay.
Both on Wi-Fi. Yeah. Works beautifully.
Now, you need an account for that or something, don't you? I haven't delved into FaceTime at all.
Not that I know of, no.
It's just an app that you load up and run on the device.
Well, it was automatically in the iPhone 4 when we got them, so.
Okay, very good.
And we know why it only works on Wi-Fi. We discovered this a few weeks back. It was Apple deliberately crippled it because of the stupid arrangements that they have with carriers like AT&T in the United States.
Yeah. Mm.
They don't want you being able to do that over the phone networks.
Yeah.
So what we need on your Mac Hacks websites, Justin, is someone to come up with a hack so we can use it over the phone networks.
I'm sure it'll be coming.
Yeah. Needs to be because it's crazy.
Because Skype originally couldn't use over Next-G either, but there was hacks out pretty quickly.
That's it.
Dr. Curly Tech on our chat has asked, have we reviewed the Mactini? What's a Mactini? Does anyone know what a Mactini is?
I have no idea. No. What's a Mactini?
What's a Mactini, Marky Mark? Oh, not Marky Mark, Dr. Curly. He's the one underneath it there. So anyway, Dark Splat says you need an Apple ID.
For FaceTime.
Well, that's what it says there. Uh-huh. Anyway.
Okay.
Yes.
If you bring them up in your contacts like you're going to make a normal phone call, what the option's there to click a FaceTime button and it just brings FaceTime up.
That's
and if
cute.
They, if they answer the phone with and they click their FaceTime button, it all runs perfectly well.
Very good. Mm. Now, Dr. Ron, during the course of the week, I noticed you sent a tweet out of on the forum of your favourite. Was it your favourite or was it somebody else's favourite Android applications? Because I read that and I thought, that was really cute.
Mm.
What a great idea for a forum post.
There were some great suggestions there I thought were really good.
Absolutely, absolutely. No, it was a user on the forum. I can't claim credit for initiating the thread. And I'll find it for you in just a moment. But there's been two or three people that have posted there now, which has been good.
If you've got some really good apps, see, mine's Chrome to Phone. I love that. That's the best.
That is impressive.
That's a very good application. Mm. But if you've got some good apps, come up and tell us about it on the forum. That'd be really good.
It's in the section called How To's and Free Advice. So if you go to the forum, which is at forum.techtalkradio.com.au, click on the individual forum that says How To's and Free Advice, and it's currently the top topic there. And it says it's called Favorite Android Apps. And Marky Mark is the person who started the thread. And I think Marky's actually in the chat room.
He's in the chat room there. There you go.
Yeah. And he says, I'm creating this list of my favorite Android apps for two reasons. One, to share. And two, in case I happen to lose my phone and somehow lock myself out of my Google account, I'll come back here and download them all again. So he's got a lot there, which there's some apps there that I use which are great. It's a really good list. I put a few extras that I've got loaded on my Android device. And Andrew, of course, as he just said, ultimate Chrome Droid app, Chrome to Phone.
Mm. Have you tried that yet, Doctor? No, you can't use it on
your tried it, but
version.
I can't install it on my version of Android.
Time for a Christmas present upgrade, isn't it?
It is, yes. It taught me into it.
Yeah, even the incumbent's doing some good deals on HTC devices at the moment, or Android devices.
Tell everyone just quickly what Chrome to Phone does.
Oh, well, what it does is, if you're a Chrome user, which I am...
Google Chrome, the web browser.
Yeah, the Google Chrome. Because everything just works well with Google stuff. It's like the Mac, the iPhone works well with the Mobile Me and all that sort of stuff. This is the Google equivalent. But what you do is, if you're browsing online and you have the Chrome to Phone icon on the top of the Chrome web browser, you just click the button and it'll instantly, like within... It's almost instantaneous. It'll pop up on your device. On your mobile phone. So the same web page you're looking at here could be the Tech Talk Radio web page. You click Chrome to Phone, bang, it just loads it up onto your browser. But wait, there's more. If you have a map reference from Google Maps, like say, for example, you've gone to 123 White Street, Box Hill.
Yep.
And the pin's on the map on your thing, and you've got to race out the door and go to that place. Just hit Chrome to phone, little icon on the top of your browser, and it opens up the apps, the web application for mapping, or maps application on the phone, and there it is. You can do your navigate to, navigate from really quickly as you're racing out the door.
That's nifty.
But wait, there's more. There's even the phone number. Let's say, for example, you look for your favourite friend's phone number and you find it on a web page or in the white pages or whatever. Just highlight it, hit Chrome to phone, and it pops up. All you have to do is click the dial button on your phone.
So whatever the text is that you've got selected, it just pushes that down to your phone.
If it's a phone number. If it's a text, it won't. Well, I haven't tried just text, but it's if you send a phone in the SMS. It could, but if it's a phone number and it recognises a phone number, it opens up the dialer instantly, and all it waits for you to do is press the call button to ring them. So really cute little app, especially if you're in a hurry. And what would be also really good is if you could actually Chrome to phone to somebody else's phone. Like, you know, you could actually send them, this is where you're supposed to be going, click the map. And
no, then you'd
like
have things happening like you have your remote control wars in the office with your televisions. You'd be sending each other. Yeah, stuff directly to each other's handsets and controlling numbers that you're ringing.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun, that.
Mm.
It goes on in our office all the time, let me tell you.
Fun and games until someone loses an eye.
Oh, yes. Well, that's what happened when the USB rocket launcher came to town.
I was talking about that the other day. There's a new enhanced one out.
What, a USB rocket launcher?
Yeah, you can fire it at other people.
USB 3, it goes faster and longer.
Yeah, that's right.
Oh, dear.
Complete with video guidance system now.
Oh, dear. It's really...
We might have to do another review.
That'd be cool, little Wi-Fi-enabled webcam in the end of the missile.
It is. Well, it's not on the missile. It's actually on the launcher itself.
Oh, right.
And you can use MSN Messenger to actually fire it at the opposition at their end. So you both have your little missile launchers and you take control at the one of the other end and shoot your mate over.
Technology's great, isn't it? This is what I love. It's such a, you know, toyish thing after a while. Think of all the research and development that went into that product, and then all of a sudden, great. This is Tech Talk Radio. We're going to come back with more of this afterwards. We've got lots to talk about tonight. We've hardly scratched the surface. Oddspot Gadget website of the week coming up. Lena's going to talk a little bit more about the 18-plus video games. We might talk
about
that. Adult
games, that will be good. Yes.
And, so back with more in a moment.
You're listening to Australia's most informative technology show, Tech Talk Radio.
Let's talk a little bit about what happened during the course of the week.
This is a new experience, agreeing with
Senator
Conroy.
It's hard, isn't it? And Julia.
The more they lock it down, the more people will work around it.
Is it?
I don't know.
I just tried to unlock Andrew's phone with my passcode.
If you're going to cross the road, look both ways.
Entertaining.
So no more pub runs.
No more pub runs.
Informative.
Look, I agree with you, Graham.
Independent.
I can feel a churn coming on.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
I mentioned the word Optus, so I think you've thrown me off.
You're listening to Australia's most informative technology show,
Tech Talk Radio.
Hey, I've got a Sony PS3 at home, PlayStation 3.
Rub it in, why don't you?
Well, I've got a question, and I'm getting all my questions answered tonight on the show.
You're on a roll.
The pressure's on.
I've got another question. Mm-hmm. My kids loaded up ABC iView on my PS3 the other day, this morning actually, and said, "Daddy, it's not working." And it had been geo-blocked from the PS3 on the home internet connection. And I thought, that's very odd. Why would iTunes be... iTunes? There's an iView. Sorry, get the right one here. Why would iView be geospatially blocked?
If only we had someone here that knew about games and games consoles.
Hang on.
Hey, that's iView, not games.
I know. But this is only... The only thing I did recently was there was a firmware update on my PS3.
You've got an American PlayStation
3. I do. And I reckon that's got something to do with it.
I think you might be right.
Yeah.
All that gloating you did over your beautiful American PS3.
Surely you
PS3.
Can hack it though, Andrew. There's got to be a way.
But it says IP blocked. It's not available in your area. But... It's looking at my local IP address from my machine, my network at home, and I'm going, this is most odd. So I went down and checked on a web browser. I could see it, but anyway.
Time for a proxy play around, perhaps?
I don't know. We'll have to do a bit of tinkering, but I just thought if anyone's got any clues on that, here we go. That'll be good.
Maybe the PlayStation is getting iView through a proxy. Maybe the PlayStation has a built-in proxy connection and it's proxying through a US site instead of an Australian site.
That's what the Bravia TV, internet TV, does, and it's incredibly annoying. But the iView never used to do that. So
It might be doing it without you knowing, though.
Yeah, we'll have to look at proxies or something. Anyway, thanks. Lena, last week we had a wonderful discussion about gaming for us adult people and all the great new things that were coming out for Christmas. And I nipped you down.
Out of time. That's nipped how fun
it was. So you got a good half hour, off you go.
Oh, God.
So what can you tell us? Where did we get up to last time?
Okay, I'll try and remember where we got up to last time. We did Super Meat Boy last time. Cod Blops.
I keep seeing some of the games that you talk about on the television advertising. I go, oh, I know what that one's about now.
Aha, uh-huh, yeah. See? I'm handy for something. Yep. Civ 5, Mafia 2, and Limbo. And I think we talked about WoW Cataclysm, and that's about as far as we got, I think.
They seem to ring a bell.
Yes. Fallout New Vegas was another one.
Haven't heard that one.
That's fairly new. So that's on PC, PS3, and Xbox.
So this is for people, just to recap, if you go back two podcasts, we started off at the single-digit kids, like up to eight or thereabouts, I think we did.
Something like
then
that.
We did the from there up to the young teens, middle teens, and now we're doing our stuff, the ones that us adults can sit and play on on the thing. So what's this one all about? Sounds interesting.
Fallout New Vegas is it's an RPG. Do you remember what that stands for, Andrew?
RPG.
Mm-hmm. Role-playing game.
Correct. No. Graham's crying out.
Rocket-propelled grenade from the background.
Back to your podcast, honey, Jim.
It's a role-playing game set in a post-apocalyptic Las
Vegas. I know
what
an MMOG is.
Good boy. You're learning, you see?
I know.
Yes,
it's good.
It's good. Post-apocalyptic Las Vegas and the surrounding areas as well.
Post-apocalyptic Las Vegas. Have you been to Las Vegas?
No.
It is post-apocalyptic.
It looks
already.
Way,
it? Already. It glows in the dark.
Well, it gets worse. This is 271 years into the future. It's set 4 years after its predecessor, which was a game called Fallout 3. And you deal with factions, warfare, gangs, and nuclear mutations.
Mm.
Mm. But it's been.
So what happens? You get mutated on or something, do you? If you're in the wrong place, you mutate.
Perhaps.
Oh.
Perhaps.
Have you played it?
No, I haven't played it.
Okay.
No, I haven't got my copy yet. Oh. Still waiting. Bethesda. Thanks, guys. another one that's very popular at the moment is called Vanquish.
I've heard of that. What's that about?
That's a good name for a game, I reckon.
It is.
Vanquish. It just rolls off the tongue.
It's like Zork.
That's yes. That's for PS3 and Xbox. As a third-person shooter, so it's looking over the shoulder of the person with the gun instead of looking through the eyes of the person with the gun, if that makes sense.
Yes.
It's dealing with themes of overpopulation and the stretching of natural resources. The United States come up with a space station to harvest solar energy, and the Russians, who are experiencing a coup d'etat, take it over and blast San Francisco with it like a sonic wave, like a solar wave, use the space station for bad instead of good, basically, and wage war on the United States. They say that, you know, do what we say or we're going to do New York City next. The president, a woman, Elizabeth Winters, which is very exciting, refuses to negotiate or back down and assembles a special operations team to take matters into their own hands. And that's what you play as, part of that special operations team.
So do you get like the feature film sort of introduction to it and you sort of go, well, I'm ready to play this. And then you get to play and you go, oh, it looks nothing like the trailer.
It looks very much like the trailer.
Oh, that's
which
good.
Is good. Yes. And it's your classic save the United States / world. Because the United States is the world is in a lot of games.
What platforms is Vanquish available for, Lena?
PS3 and Xbox.
Okay. There you go, Andrew. PS3 game for you. Good one for the Christmas stocking.
Yep, for
Doesn't sound like a children's
Not
game, though.
Kids.
No, we're doing adults 18 type games.
I downloaded Pac-Man the other day for the kids off the PS3 store. That was good.
Yeah, Pac-Man?
Yeah.
You got it? The new one?
Well, the one that's just come out, I think it is. Yeah.
CDX?
Something like that, yes.
It's fantastic.
Yeah, no, I couldn't resist that.
Absolutely loving it at the moment.
Misspent
use
there.
Yeah? It's fantastic, yeah. I love that you can set off a bomb now to send all the ghosts back to the middle again. That's something I think the first Pac-Man lacked that, but it's fantastic. I highly recommend that for all ages. And another one that's come out that's very, very popular is Dead Rising 2. Now, this is...
Why do all the adult games have to have morbid names to them? Like, can't there be...
Not all of them do.
Happy Leisure, Bunnies.
Leisure Suit Larry or something like that. Always had a nice
happy
ring to it.
Happy Bunnies?
No. There probably is one called Happy Bunnies. I wouldn't put it past them. Not all of them are as gory and awful as they sound. But I did put a lot of the ones that are suitable for everyone into the younger age groups. They're good for adults as well. You're not limited to just these sorts of genres. And a lot of indie games, you'll have a lot more originality in terms of fighting and whatnot. Dead Rising 2 is an action-adventure / survival horror.
Mm-hmm.
You have to complete specific missions while you're fighting off hordes of zombies. And
oh, zombies.
Yeah, it's a pretty
You wanted
one.
Zombies last week. We were talking about zombies last week.
Yes. And I didn't get them. They were boring zombies of the malware description.
There was.
Over 7,000 zombies can appear on your screen at any one time. So that gives you an idea of how intense it is.
Man, is that an MMOZ game?
No. No.
What's an MMOZ?
Massively multiplayer online zombies.
Oh, fair enough. Oh,
I would play that. I would play that. One of the big draw cards is its unique ability to manufacture your own weapons that you can find throughout the game. For example, you find a kayak paddle and two chainsaws, and you can duct tape a chainsaw to each end of the kayak paddle and paddle your way through the zombies.
Oh, cool.
It's that sort of thing that people are going absolutely nuts
for. It's just
for.
A blood fest.
It is. It's an absolute mass of destruction. You can also
I've got a mental image in my mind now. That's really bad.
You can duct tape a hand grenade to a football, for example, so then you can throw it, you know, into a group of zombies. Put a stick of dynamite into a hunk of meat, or hammer nails into a baseball bat.
Oh, good.
That sort of thing to try and... But it's all for a good cause, you see, of course. This isn't just for fun. The character you're playing is called Chuck Green, and his daughter's been infected by the zombies, and he has to find the zombie.
So she's turning into a zombie.
She is.
So it's a race against time.
It is, yep. To save your daughter. So it's all worth it. While you're kayaking through...
With
zombies.
Chainsaws on the end of your...
Yep, you can think it's all for my daughter.
Dr. Curly Tech in our chat room says, that's how I power my kayak.
Yeah.
With,
that is
with
a powered
chainsaws
kayak.
In the sea of zombie.
Yes.
All right.
You might be able to play it on your one-button Mac too.
Now, the good thing about this particular game is that if you don't want to invest in the whole thing straight away, on the Xbox Live... Arcade, there was a prologue released for it, which they call it sort of a bridging chapter to Dead Rising 2, and it was called Dead Rising 2 Case Zero, and it costs about 400 Microsoft points, and it could be described probably as a single mission demo to get you a feel for the game. So if you don't want to go and buy the game straight away...
What's the exchange rate like at the moment for Microsoft points?
400 points would be probably around $5-6. Something like that.
Okay, so you get more value for your Linden dollar than you do with your Microsoft points.
Pretty much.
Yeah. I'm very confused about it. Why does everyone have to use their own currency?
Because
so
then,
they can control it. Yeah. They can control the value.
So and that way, when we, you know how we whinge about the Apple Store in the States being different to the Apple Store here by a large margin?
Yeah.
They're trying to avoid that by having their own currency and they can do whatever the hell they like with it.
Okay.
No matter what the real world economy, how that fluctuates.
I did see someone having a rant in an Apple blog the other day about the price of songs between Australia and America at the moment, and considering the exchange rate. So we're not alone. Others have noticed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just, I think it's a more complicated issue than what it appears somehow.
So what else have you got in your bag of Christmas goodies for us adults to buy for our gaming consoles? You got a Kinect yet? I digress.
No, I haven't got a Kinect yet.
Really?
No, unless I get one.
I'm seeing
for
the ads
free,
on the telly
I'm
now.
I'm not going to get one.
Really?
No, I think Dance Central looks like a hell of a lot of fun.
Yeah. I reckon that'd be a good one for small, younger girls who like dancing and stuff.
And the older girls who like drinking with their mates and hanging out and playing silly games. It'd be fantastic.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it's I can't justify the cost for one game, I don't think.
There's also the gymnastic one, I think. I saw an ad on the telly for it of some woman being scanned and then she starts dancing and I thought, oh, okay.
I can't see myself doing that.
No?
No. Flipping backwards and whatnot. But one of the big problems with the Kinect as well is how much space you actually require in your home to run it.
Really?
Yeah.
I've never looked into the setup specs. Someone told me the other day it takes about 2 hours to scan your living room. Is that true?
It's true. Yep, it has to scan all the belongings in your living room to see where your coffee table is.
What happens if you move something? What happens if the cat's in the room and it walks through in the middle of a scan?
Exactly.
It gets to play too.
It does.
Yeah, kitty.
Next week
Come
I'll
meet
do
my zombies.
I'll do a bit on kitty games. But no, you need about 2 meters of space or 2.5 meters or something ridiculous like that to actually away from your Kinect to actually play it. And that's I've got a coffee table there, so
I
would have to move things around.
I wonder if the Kinect, this is Microsoft's version for the genuine, or you know, hey, you've got to do your computer and it knows all the hardware and stuff in your computer to know that you're genuine. So if you change something, it says, no, you're
this
not genuine.
Your genuine lounge room.
Which means it's your genuine lounge room. So if you take it to your friend's place, that's it. No, you're not allowed to play in your friend's lounge room.
Well, that's a good point, actually, because like the Wii remotes, you can actually take your little icons, your Miis, they're called, with you and go and play on a mate's computer or a mate's Wii.
Mm.
You can't do that with the Kinect,
perhaps. My little cousins do that when we have family functions. They come over to our place and they bring their Wiimotes with them and they can play their Wii characters on our games on our Wii, and it's fantastic. But you can't do that with the Kinect.
Longtime friend of Tech Talk Radio, Warlock, who is not in the chat room tonight.
He's not actually noticeable with his absence.
By his absence. He says on his Twitter feed, the cheapest that I've seen, the 250-gigabyte Xbox 360 with Kinect,
that's right,
is $488 at Dick Smith. Can anyone beat that? He tweeted that today. So there you go. Dick Smith apparently has got them for $488. So that's the complete package. If you don't own an Xbox, you go and buy the Xbox 360, you buy the Kinect, $488.
That's a good deal too. I paid that when I bought my Xbox, and that was a bundle with the Xbox and three or four games.
So very good.
Yeah. Getting a whole nother peripheral for that.
Thank you for your insight into gaming.
That's all right.
We'll talk about that more coming up probably next week on our last penultimate. No, this is penultimate show.
This is a penultimate
ultimate show.
The
next
ultimate
week.
Show.
The ultimate show. Back in a minute.
Around the world, you're listening to Australia's premier tech talk show, Tech Talk Radio.
I think we should talk more about zombies at the moment because Lena likes zombies.
I do.
Did you know the Australian Communications and Media Authority, which is the governing body here, the all things telecommunications-ish, they regulate.
Are all zombies?
Zombies. Yeah.
They've reported that there are approximately 25,000 to 30,000 computers compromised by malware every day in Australia. That's a lot of computers that get a nasty thing come into their system. ACMA expected the total number of infected machines in Australia this year to soar past 4 million. Zombie computers infected by malware or other exploits are often part of a wider network of botnets used to commit cybercrimes such as spam, phishing, or denial of service attacks, as WikiLeaks experienced today. So you think about all this sort of stuff. Do we get to a point where ISPs need to become proactive and say, hey, you've got a bot on your machine, I'm going to disconnect you and have some lovely telemarketer ring you up and say, hi, this is such and such from whichever ISP, insert here. We believe you have a botnet. Although there's a lot of phishing scams at the moment about people doing just that. from purporting to be from organisations such as Microsoft and the likes.
Well, there's nothing that compels ISPs to do that at the moment, but it's certainly in their own interest. It's in their interest because
bandwidth,
they're reducing traffic on their network, but it's also in the interest of the greater community, obviously. But they don't have to completely shut a user down in order to fix this sort of a problem. So if, for example, you're infected and your computer's just sending lots and lots of emails out on a particular port, then they can block that particular port so that you can't send any mail at all, but it doesn't impact upon your web browsing or other activity. And they can then contact you, as you say, ring you up and say, look, you've got a problem with your computer. Don't expect you to just to take my word for it over the phone, because this is a phone call out of the blue. Ring us back. Ring us back at IINet, or ring us back at NetSpace
or
whatever.
Yeah,
and ask for the customer service department, quote this number, and you can call them back.
You ring Telstra's help desk now. They can do that for you. We talked about that last week.
Well, ISPs should be doing that proactively because it's in everybody's interests.
And even without having to get consent to turn off particular ports, they could just do the proactive contact and say, hey, look, we've noticed this. You need to fix it. And not necessarily offer that will send you some dodgy software,
but an ISP
send you
could
off to a retailer to buy some legitimate product off the shelf to fix it.
Yeah, they could. But even still, an ISP could block a particular port that was giving them grief. You know, like if you were being, you know, if it's a mail port or something like that, they could do that and then say, we've blocked this mail port, you may have noticed. When you get your act together again, we'll unblock it so you can send mail.
Or if it's a distributed denial of service attack and it's
port 80?
Port 80, which is the port that web browsers use to transfer web traffic.
But anyway, does that surprise anybody? 25,000 to 30,000 computers are compromised by malware every day in Australia. That's one hell of a lot of computers.
It's a lot, isn't it? It's a lot. Hopefully, a vast proportion of that number are cleaned up and fixed in a fairly short time. Hopefully, an infection is detected fairly far. And you'd hope that infections of that nature were prevented completely from the outset. But if you were infected, you'd hope that was detected and fixed fairly fast.
Absolutely. In other news today, Arnet. Do you remember them?
Yes.
If you're in the educational side of things, you probably know them fairly well. Arnet, AARNet, however you want to pronounce it. They traditionally are the educational backbone. They connect all sorts of schools and universities and the likes. Well, they've decided to blow the NBN away.
Oh, have they?
And they've actually gone to their own terabit network.
Well, they'll do that, won't they? they sort of created their own network in the first place.
I think they did, didn't they? Yeah, so they got out there, dug their own trenches and ran cables, but no, I'm making that bit up. But yes, that's pretty impressive when you think of educational institutions and research in particular, having fairly interesting sort of speeds of that sort of thing. But currently ARNET's using anywhere between 1 and 10 gig, depending on the endpoint technology that the schools or universities are using. 7 or 8 institutions currently had 10 gigabits connected, but by contrast, the much-debated NBN only promises 100 megabits per second. Although they've actually talked it up to about a gig, haven't they? I think Conroy did it a couple of months back. He said, oh, guess what, guys? We can actually go to a gig.
Well, the limitation's not going to be in the cable. It's going to be in the switching equipment. So as new and better switching equipment becomes available, then the cable will be able to support the high speeds.
Mm.
But ARNET or AARNET, they've been around for a long time. They've been around for 20 years.
Absolutely.
And, as you say, Andrew, they've got their own network, which they've traditionally run between different university campuses and school campuses. So it's good that they're still doing that.
Do you reckon, I was just going to say that there ought to be a government body that sort of does that sort of stuff as well, but I guess there will be with the NBN now. I was just sort of thinking then that, you know, our state government, I wonder if with the change of government we'll get beyond IE6. Do you reckon?
No, I think they've got much bigger fish issues to fry. Yeah.
Okay. I just sort of thought you might, those that work in the industry might go, yay, we're finally going to go up a notch. In other news today, which is sort of not really tech related, but anyone who's ever dealt with tech would know of Leslie Nielsen, the comic who sadly passed away over the weekend.
That was very sad, wasn't it?
I was sitting there thinking about some of the great things he was in, the Naked Gun, and of course the one which I thought was absolutely brilliant was the Airport series, which I think was called Airplane in the United States. If you've ever tried Googling, they go, what are you talking about? But do you remember? He was 84, and he had the onset of pneumonia, which traditionally is a sign of things to come when people get pneumonia at that age. So
unfortunately, he succumbed to that.
Mm. Yeah.
He's well known, obviously, for the Naked Gun series of movies. Very, very funny.
Let's reminisce for 20 seconds. Have a chuckle on us.
Lieutenant, the feeling is mutual. Nice to meet you, too. Cuban?
No, Dutch Irish. My father was from Wales.
Oh. It's the truth.
It's true what they say. Cops and women don't mix. It's like eating a spoonful of Drano. Sure, it'll clean you out, but it'll leave you hollow inside. Too bad, Sugar Puff.
Surely you can't be serious.
I am serious. And don't call me Shirley. Nice beaver.
Thank you. I just had it stuffed.
Let me help you with that.
rest in peace, Leslie Nielsen. He's funny stuff, really, wasn't it? Yes, passed away on the weekend in the United States from complications from pneumonia. It's a bit like when Maxwell Smart passed away. Remember that? Oh, he was a gadget man. I still think of Max when you see those great shows on, I think they're on free-to-air again at the moment, I think, aren't they, too?
A lot of them are.
On Go.
Yeah, that was a while back.
Don Adams.
Yes. Now, in other news this week, the National Australia Bank had a bit of a problem with paying people.
Yeah, what happened there?
Well, I still think they've got some issues, haven't they? I think I heard on the news today that I think they've got about 80% of those customers having money flowing through their automatic teller machine. But there were reports of poor people having to go and use cash converters and those sort of things to hop goods to the value of $200 so they could go to the supermarket
to get
and buy
cash,
food so they could feed their family
and eat and live and stuff.
So, but anyway, yes, it was one of the things. NAB experienced a major IT outage overnight over the weekend that delayed payments for potentially millions of customers. And they've brought it down, I think I heard, last was reported to a corrupt configuration file somewhere.
Yeah, they said it was a corrupt computer file.
So if you didn't learn out of the airline incident recently about backing up and having redundancies, learn it from NAB.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Especially when you're dealing with people's money.
Yeah. And if you think, because traditionally those banking things are rhetorical because, it's not so much the money to buy the food for the groceries. It's the payment that should have come out to go to the other institution, which is traditionally fairly inflexible when it comes to the fact that, you haven't paid us, therefore you cop a whack penalty fee or whatever it is like that. So I feel for those people because it'll be rhetorical down the line.
Are they going to reimburse the costs that were?
They have said that they will, if you have any out-of-pocket expenses whatsoever, to come talk to them. That doesn't mean they're going to pay it, but come talk to them and see what happens. Yeah. So
a spokesman for the consumer advocacy group Choice said, if this really was just a corrupted file which has caused this much damage, this much distress, we think it's a good time to take a long, hard look at the payment system and see if it really is robust enough.
It's probably win.ini or boot.ini on a...
Well, on the chat, they've got ini.bat and payroll.bat as some suggestions.
Yes, payment.ini, that's what it will be. It'll be corrupt, yes.
Absolutely.
We shouldn't laugh. I mean, people who are listening will be nab customers and they just can't access their cash. If they need cash to live, then, you know, you put a lot of faith in banks. Don't you look after your money.
A lot more than faith in banks and law. You put your cash in the banks too.
Right. So.
And what does it come down to? Their computer versus your opinion. If you know, no, I had $10,000. No, you only had $1,000. What happened to that extra zero? Oh, we had a cropped ini file.
Mm.
I feel sorry for the older generation who, you know, have gone to access their money. It's not there. They don't have the internet. They're not going to read up what's going on. And they're just sort of left there going, why can't I get my money? I don't understand. You know, they have a routine. They do the same thing at the same time every week. And, you know, this would throw some people off
certainly
immensely.
Would. Windows had a zero-day flaw. That's a flaw which they discover, which is actually out there in the marketplace. If you, I think...
They've got no time to fix it. It exists and it's out there. Yep.
Anyway, this flaw traditionally allowed hackers to bypass the user account control security found in Vista and Windows 7. The flaw was posted briefly on a programming education website and could even limit user account to execute code in the kernel mode, which is not good. So hopefully Windows will fix that with a patch.
So I have a patch Tuesday coming up fairly soon.
Patch tomorrow,
that,
I reckon.
I reckon tomorrow. Yeah, I'm with you on that one. They tend to turn those around fairly quickly. Also, iNet take Bob in-house. Did you know Bob? You've got Bobs, both
got
of
Bob.
You.
Yep.
Yeah, they're doing their own R&D now in-house. Apparently, it's gone off really well for them. So as a result, they've brought their research and development in-house and we'll probably see some really good things come out of Bob in the next little bit. How's your dropouts
hardware
going?
Hardware-wise, do you think?
Oh, hardware and facility-wise, How's your dropouts going?
Brilliant.
Yeah, so it was you had a dodgy Bob.
I think it was hardware-related issue.
Oh, okay. Just before we go to the Oddspot gadget and website of the week, Steve Wozniak says he was wrong about the Nuance Apple deal. Do you know anything about this, JD?
Only what I've read online. Apparently he made some comment in a vodcast saying that Apple had purchased this company that's responsible for speech recognition.
Yeah.
And in fact, they hadn't. So the share price jumped and everyone got, you know, out of control and he was wrong.
Oh. Whoops. Yeah. Can't be good. Tim Berners-Lee, the man who invented the internet, came out and said he was concerned about...
He invented the World Wide Web.
All right, yes, I stand corrected. He invented the World Wide Web. Basically came out and said he was very incredibly concerned over Facebook and other sites like LinkedIn, other social networking sites.
You said it was going to be the end of civilization as we knew it or something.
Yeah, it's. I must admit, when people like Woz and Tim Berners-Lee come out and say things, it's not as if it's like, you know, us saying something, and go, oh yeah, what would they know? But when people of this sort of caliber come out and say things, you stop and read the articles and things like that, but... probably worth a read through if you have a few minutes and just see what he has to say. But came out with some interesting thing. Google accused Facebook earlier this month of leaving 600 million users in a data dead end when their contact details and personal information effectively trapped. So you're looking at these large organizations bringing you into one spot, which is the opposite of what the web was, which is let you use everything everywhere and interact with it. No, you've got to have a Facebook login, or you've got to have a Twitter account, or you've got to have a 9MSN login, or whatever it is like that. And he was expressing his concerns over it. Whether it is a concern or not, I guess, is yet to be seen. But you look at what's happening with a lot of data these days. It does tend to go, well, look at what happens with Facebook. It just ends up on your Google phone. I see pictures of you, Dr. Ron, whenever you change your Facebook update.
But at least you don't have to buy a customised application to run the web, which I guess was really what he was after.
Yes.
Was a universal way of accessing information on the network, and that's still there. The fact that you log into things now for security purposes means that there might be some customisations around which sites you can visit, which I think is what he's voicing his concerns over. But at the end of the day, we can run Chrome, we can run Firefox, you can run Safari, i.e. version, whatever your government will allow you to use.
Yeah, if you work in the Victorian government, you can use IE6, which is good.
But you can still access the internet from a variety of platforms. So I think
that's true. Yep,
I think his original goal's been met, and it's just a matter of how we get around the security issues.
All right. So that's all good. Google's going to lure Office users with Cloud Connect too. This is Google having another go at the incumbent. It's, you know, Google Apps. I think Graham's a Google Apps user who's wandered off somewhere at the moment. But do you use Google Apps, anybody?
Adam does, doesn't he?
Well, maybe. I don't know, really. But anyway, if you're a Google Apps user, which is where you can actually log on and use spreadsheets and all their sort of good toys online, Google have invited Google Apps for Business customers to test a new feature for Microsoft Office, which instantly replicates an Office document in the Google Cloud. Mm. So, which is good concept if you're working in a mobile environment or you want to share stuff with other colleagues in other remote places. The new tool, which will work in Office 2003, 2007, and 2010, brings Google Docs cloud features to Office documents. So collaborative work is going to... They've sort of jumped in on the new Office stuff, or on the Office stuff, the Office package which Microsoft have had. Because they've never really had a big cloud presence, have they? They've had the live... What did they have? I really don't even know. Did Microsoft actually have a cloud presence these days?
They had a .NET version, didn't they?
Something like that. But yes, it's all...
This new one, do you think they'll have a button in Word where you can sort of export to Google Docs or something like that?
Maybe. I haven't tried it yet. Maybe some of our listeners might try it and get back to us or something like that.
We've used another platform for a long time, which is Zoho.com.
Yeah.
For online collaboration, for sharing office-type documents. And that's been more mature for a longer period of time than Google Docs, I think, which is why we picked it up fairly early on. So that's a good alternative as well.
All right, and just to bring the tone of the evening down before we do go to the Oddspot gadget.
We've been fairly low on this episode,
speak for yourself. In preparation of your Oddspot and gadget and website of the week, Victoria's public service can't look away from naughty sites.
Right.
And I use Victoria there. I'm going to use the word Australian there. Let's go a little bit more broader. But Australian public servants are increasingly making improper use of internet and email resources on work time. This is according to a report released last Friday. Agencies appear to be getting catching their staff in the act. Some 313 investigations into improper use of internet or email were recorded by the federal government's annual State of the Service report for 2009 and 10, up 55% on the previous year.
What are people looking at?
I don't know. Naughty sites, whatever a naughty site is.
What's a naughty site?
What's the definition of inappropriate content, though? Could it be Facebook? Could it be Twitter?
That's right. Yeah, because...
Well, yes.
There's obviously...
Ask Fred Nile.
Yeah. Well, there are extreme...
Just for research.
That's right, sites, but obviously there's things like social networking sites, which some agencies would prohibit their employees from looking at.
Mm. Yeah. Especially if you worked in DHS or something like that.
Could explain the 50% spike.
Absolutely. Oddspot Gadget website of the week coming up after this.
Suffering succotash. This has to be the best technology show on the internet. Tech Talk Radio.
Doctor On, listening to the stream.
Furious. Correct. Oh,
no. There's Tony Abbott, are you listening? Wireless is not the answer.
Wacko, I say.
Oh, did you download it?
I did.
I downloaded it too and I thought, what the?
It was brilliant until the power supply blew up.
What's the WAF like?
The WAF is very, very high. It has high WAF.
Entertaining.
He's had the little chip put in the back of his neck.
Informative.
I suppose I may as well just throw that one out.
Independent.
Yeah. I was watching you on Latitude.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
I'm on a plane.
Can you hear me?
I'm on a plane.
Are you there? You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
In this house, we obey the laws of thermodynamics.
Cool! This thing is amazing!
Tech Talk Radio's Gadget of the Week.
Out of my hole!
This week's gadget is contributed by Bruce, who says via the feedback email address...
Hi, Bruce.
G'day, folks. About a year ago, I decided I needed a new camera to replace my 5-year-old Olympus. First of all, I required a compact digital with a decent-sized optical zoom. And secondly, I just decided... I didn't know you could get these sorts of devices, Andrew. I decided that it would reduce tension and satisfy the WAF if I could get a camera incorporating a GPS receiver that could accurately locate where the photo was taken.
A lot of cameras do that these days.
Well...
And that puts it in the EXA file format. So you get your lat longs when
you
take a photo.
Look at the photo, say, now where was that again?
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's all
you can see it.
The location saved in the image.
Yeah.
So the gadget of the week, contributed by Bruce, is the Panasonic Lumix DMC TZ10. Panasonic Lumix DMC TZ10. It's a 12.1 megapixel digital camera, and it has a built-in GPS receiver. So Bruce goes on to say that you mentioned a website called ShopBot.
I did.
He went there, he found one of these for less than $300. CNET.com.au, which
don't
is a review site. No, he says CNET says the good points are it has full manual controls, GPS tagging, AV, CHD, light recording.
Whatever that is.
HDMI out, and it's a solid build. The bads, screen could have a high resolution, no RAW capture, and it's expensive. The RRP is $700.
Oh, but, you got it for $300 on it.
But yeah, Bruce says he picked it up for less than $300. So have a look around. Anyway, if you're after a digital camera with GPS receiver, the Panasonic Lumix DMC TZ10.
Here it is, everybody. The world's greatest website.
Tech Talk Radio website of the week.
This week's website, YouSendIt.com.
I use this all the time.
Do you need to send a large file to someone? Do you not have access to a common FTP server? YouSendIt.com makes sending and receiving large files super fast and easily. You can easily send your large file by uploading it through your web browser from your desktop. You store the file securely on the YouSendIt.com server, and an email is sent to the recipient. Your recipient receives a notification, clicks on the link, and can download the file. Use it for free or sign up a business plan. And, yep, go for your life. That's our website. Andrew,
recommended
by the panelists. YouSendIt.com.
There is a fine line between genius and madness.
Missed it by that much.
I know nothing. Nothing.
Don't ask! For God's sakes, don't ask!
Houston, we have a problem.
The Odd Spot on Tech Talk Radio.
An American woman with the first name of Ashley is perhaps starting to regret picking the username The Ashes for a Twitter account, as thousands of people around the world continue to ask her for pitch reports, opinions, and latest scores from the Gabba Ashes test match.
Is she a bookie?
After being inundated on the microblogging site in recent days, Ashley responded over the weekend with a tweet saying, "I am not a freaking cricket match." In a tweet earlier today, she said, "I'm not sure who I support, England or Australia. However, I have been to England, but I've never been to Australia." She had just a few hundred followers early on Sunday morning, but that figure's now risen to nearly 5,000. Vodafone and Qantas have said that they both now wish to bring her to Australia so that Ashley can watch a match. You can follow Ashley at twitter.com.
Or for choosing a Twitter account
/The Ashes. The Ashes.
Excellent.
That's our Odd Spot, Andrew.
And that is our last show for Tech Talk Radio from this very studio. Next week, the ultimate Tech Talk Radio. This was the penultimate one. The ultimate one next week, live up at the... wherever Graham was the other night, he came back.
Sophia's Family Restaurant.
Check the website. It's the one
in East Burwood. It's on Burwood Highway, just near Blackburn Road in East Burwood.
And check the website for more details. We've got to go. We're running over. Thanks, everybody. Thank you, Lyman. Thank you, Ball Boys. And good luck on the Ashes. Back next week. Bye for now.
You've been listening to Tech Talk Radio, brought to you each and every week by a group of dedicated professionals from within the media, broadcasting, IT and telecommunications industries. The team consists of executive producer Andrew McComb, producer Dr. Ron, panellists Justin Dunlop, Graham Callaghan and Lena van der Venter. Expert opinion is provided by Adam Turner, and our US correspondents are Lydia Davis and Mark Diggins. Post-production facilities courtesy of Evolving Communications. Podcast production by Graham Callaghan. The show is broadcast, recorded and streamed live each and every Monday night at 8 p.m. from the studios of 3WBC in Melbourne. The crew wishes to thank all the stations around Australia that rebroadcast Tech Talk Radio each week. Tech Talk Radio is also available for syndication on your local station. For sponsorship and advertising inquiries, call 03 8682 9099 or visit our website techtalkradio.com.au for more information. This has been a production of Tech Talk Radio Vic and is subject to copyright and applicable laws and may not be rebroadcast without approval.